is Wade Rathke. That means it's Wade's World. It's Friday morning. We run from 9 to 9:30 Central Standard Time, and God knows what time you're on, because we are also live streaming at www.kabf.org, available by podcast coming this Monday. And, of course, we're broadcasting at 100,000 watts of people power directly from our studios in Little Rock, Arkansas at KABF 88.3 FM. As well as rebroadcast in New Orleans, Flagstaff, Arizona, Dallas, Texas, cities and countries beyond. You know the story on Wade's World. We are lucky enough to talk to the most interesting people in the world. And today we're talking to John Anderson, head organizer of Toronto Acorn.
Hey.
Yeah, in Canada. You know, a lot of people don't know what's happening in Canada, but you're going to know everything within these 30 minutes. John, welcome to Wade's World.
Thanks for having me, Wade.
I couldn't believe you and I haven't really talked for almost 2 years on Wade's World, and the people need to hear John Anderson and what's happening. Last time it was all about British Columbia. Now you're back in Ontario. I heard you talking about an installment loan campaign, and installment loans are a tricky piece of work. I want you to talk to me and listeners about what's going on. Y'all are doing some great breakthrough work about this.
Cool, thanks. Installment loans are loans that you take out money, you're in need of money, you get very easy, very high interest loan, you pay it back in installments. Over every month, over 36 months.
How big are these loans for, John?
Up to 15,000. Most of our targeted companies that we're going after do it up to 10,000.
Somebody might be doing this for a medical bill, or they might be doing
Well, not
this.
A medical bill in Canada, because we got that whole free healthcare thing going
my
on.
My bad. I keep forgetting there's heaven just north. But they need a repair on a house, a car breaks down, you know, but it's usually emergencies. It's not just buying groceries for 10 grand.
No, we have one of our great leaders, a tree fell on her house. So she's like, got to fix my roof. I can't go into the Toronto winter like this. So she took out one. She's thinking. I think one of the, it's really, it's the key predatory lending. You look at the board. It's people from Citibank. It's people from payday lenders in Canada. All over, right over all of these boards. And it's just the traditional practices that you guys in the USA would know all too well. More and more, we in Canada, we thought we had protected ourselves, had good regulations, the Bank Act was strong.
Well, and payday lending has been a signature campaign for a decade for Acorn Canada, but none of that covers these installment loans?
Right. So any loan over $1,500 isn't covered by any of the payday loan acts, which are exist in 9 out of the 10 provinces, most of the provinces. Definitely where the Acorn offices are. And then it's not home mortgages. So then there's huge gaps in regulations around any loan just around this. So of that size. So companies are able to come in. City Financial was the first one. I think it's One Main. They rebranded it from the United States. But Citibank came in, started providing these. Easy Financial is a new company, new-ish company that was doing home furniture rentals, which is really popular in neighborhoods. You need a couch, you need a new computer, you rent to own it from them, so you get a $300 Dell laptop, you're paying $900 for it, but la-di-da-di-da, you don't really care because you got a computer.
There's no cap on the interest rate.
There's really no caps on the interest rate. What there is in the criminal code, they passed this. Canada used to have a Small Loans Act. They got rid of it in the 80s and replaced it with really loan sharking laws. They said, well, then we need to figure out ways to be able to go after these, like, I don't know, gangsters or people, loan sharks. So people aren't allowed making loans above 60%. That's it. That's the only law in the book. It's in the criminal code.
60% interest. 60%
interest. So we're finding.
Well, you know you had an interest bill when you got, 60%.
Right. Oh. So we got, you got our membership coming back and saying, I took out 10K. I paid back 24. I still owe 75. $7,500. Just and then our mayor just stop paying the bills. We're finding that City Financial doesn't take you to court because they're actually, we are arguing, are actually breaking the 60% law. They take it up through refinancing fees, this and that. You know, you guys know all about this stuff in the States, making it go above 60%. The new company, Easy Financial, they are just advertising. They come out and they're advertising right up there to the 60%. And I think City Financial was coming out saying, hey, take out a loan for 29%. And then they had all these fees that brought it up, some astronomical
amount. Now, wasn't City Financial trying to sell Main Street to somebody, or did that fall through?
I think in the United States there was an article. I remember reading an article that was in the Times talking about how they were really trying to rebrand. They got to get away from the subprime stuff. It's not good for them.
Yeah, because that was their main. City Financial was their main subprime, you know, hole in their arm where all the money went.
Right. You know, and this is like teaches you something, right? That like the banks are really just awful, and they say they're rebranding in the States. Well, this is their big brand in Canada. The only brand they have in Canada. There's no Citibank. You can't go to a Citibank and open up a real account in Canada. The only thing they have is City Financial.
And a lot of credit cards.
Oh, yeah. My bad.
Yeah, there are those credit cards everywhere because you see signs. You can't get on a subway or bus in the GTO without seeing a City something sign. So I know they got your credit card, but that's good. So they don't do anything with interest that isn't at least two figures.
Right. they don't do that.
You know, but in the U.S., we speak of banking now since the recession as a, you know, criminal enterprise, as they call it. So, I mean, they've paid so many billions of dollars worth of fines. So where are you going on this campaign? So now you know payday lending didn't cover it. So what in the world is going to stop these bloodsuckers from getting in everybody's arms?
So our great leaders, Donna Borden, who's out of East York, just part of Toronto, and Marva Burnett, who's the national and international president of Acorn, and Monica McGovern, who's a great leader out in BC, are leading up a campaign to get an anti-predatory loan act passed in Canada, which would lower the interest rate to 30%, so change the criminal code. It would also change, put up the Bank Act. I think that to be able to get stop these people, stop this from happening. Of course, I'm an organizer. I'm not a bank regulator expert. It's an uphill battle. I really think, though, Easy Financial took over all the cash store locations. There's so many links to payday lenders. Payday lenders were able to get regulations around them so much, and this is just such a new thing. They've opened 245 locations of Easy Financial that are
in Canada,
unregulated, giving up people loans for $10,000, and no one's doing it. Now, Money Mart, which is the big payday lender in Canada, like the main, our main target for our payday loan.
We're on our remittance campaign.
Our target on our remittance campaign is now giving out installment loans up to $3,000. You're not going up to the full 10, but again, just getting out of it. It's just, you know, if you get a new crevice, that's where the cockroaches are going to go away. You know what I mean? That's what our members are saying.
That's a quote our listeners need to remember. Watch I got to seal up those crevices or the cockroaches are coming. And look, let me tell you, I'm a long way from home, but we know about cockroaches, you know. So those crevices can be pretty big because we got some large cucaracha. So, John, is this a provincial piece of legislation or a federal piece? Because it's complicated getting things passed here with the parties, and you got a big election coming.
Right. So we've gotten, it's a federal campaign. So the federal government would need to change the criminal code, would need to change the interest rate laws, and bring in a lot of bank regulations to make sure banks aren't doing anything fishy. The provinces would be the ones that would deal with financial institutions, which is something we've learned in our remittance campaign. So I think it would be a duel. They need to be working together to make this happen.
Because that's what happened to us on payday lending. Originally, we tried to deal with the federal level. They punted.
Yeah. They carved it out.
They carved it out rather than doing the right thing. So
right.
We had to then go fight it tooth and hammer at the local level.
And really the answer to your question is, I'm not quite sure. I think we're going to keep on fighting.
Regulators on wage world. Right. We talk to people like you. You're good with us.
I think that we keep on pushing it. So right now we've had conversations with the Ministry of Finance in Ontario talking about it, getting it on their radar. And we've got a commitment from the NDP to deal with the issue of predatory lenders in Canada. So we've gotten a commitment from them on our platform.
And the NDP is one of the political parties here that's actually contending heavily in the current federal
election. Right. They're leading in the polls to win, be the first Social Democrats to lead Canada. So yeah, so it's exciting.
History.
It's exciting times. We got a long, of course, you know, NDP wins. Doesn't mean anything. I don't think the main membership base of the NDP is taking out installment loans every day like our members are. It's a different constituency, but we're still going to be there pushing. At least we'd have open ears. Right now with Stephen Harper or, you know, George Bush of the North, this guy is... He's like, he thinks that, ideologically, we cannot regulate anything, ever.
There was an article in the Atlantic magazine saying he's not the George Bush, but the Richard Nixon of the North. Wow.
Right.
I mean, that's like, you just went up the radar. We're talking to John Anderson, head organizer of Toronto Acorn. You know, a lot of people see Canada yawn, you know, it's getting a little boring, but... It's a whole different world. The Blue Jays are leading.
Yeah.
Rob Ford said, you know, it's okay. I can do XYZ. I was hammered. That was a former mayor of Toronto. You know, Toronto's becoming a different place. We all of a sudden won something 42-0. I mean, what's happening in Toronto? Is like the water changing? What's going on?
Really interesting.
The labor, you know, they're spying in the local labor council in a big election. I mean,
what is going on?
Come on, tell us what's happening here, John.
So it is an more exciting place than I think than Toronto was when I was a younger guy. I think that anyone who's familiar with Toronto Acorn, and among your listeners that might be next to nobody, we've been working on a campaign to license landlords to bring in property standard laws that are properly enforced, make it so that landlords, you know, we're paying rent, they got to do the repairs in the building. We've been working on that forever in Toronto. Rob Ford, this guy's a populist and he's able to, like, he is a crazy man. He's just a lunatic, but just a genius kind of guy who can relate and get votes from the public. Really, like, really amazing. He, of course, got cancer in the election, had to drop out, and his less charming brother came in and still came within, you know, they didn't lose by that much, right? So a lot of people argue if Rob Ford didn't get cancer, he'd still be the mayor, even though he
got cut. Now, is he still alive?
He's still alive. He ended up running for city council, not while in chemo, not campaigning at all, and winning by like 60
points. He's on the city council.
He's on the city council in Etobicoke North, where we're doing a lot of work.
And in remission, I assume, or something.
Yeah, they're saying he came out as cancer-free. He had a tumor the size, bigger than a softball, they're saying, in his stomach. Anyway, so that's awful. No one wants anyone to deal with that.
Yeah, exactly.
So Rob Ford, though, the phenomenon was that he was really able to cut into our base. He was able to say, I'm the man of the people. I'm speaking for the tenants. I'm speaking for those. And he really did things a lot like Acorn did, in a way, I think, now less effective, not really ever building power for them, but, you know, coming in there and speak up, getting in there and tapping into the energy that's coming out of resentment about being poor in Toronto.
Now, you always had an interesting analysis of his base. It was not sort of the core center city, but it was various kinds of outlay. I mean, Toronto is a big metropolitan area. The city is a large geographical space, but it tended to be not suburbs exactly, because they were still within the city limits, but I mean, I forget exactly how you used to describe it, but base was interesting.
Yeah, big U around the city. So downtown people, he called them elites, bunch of elites. So the Bay Street people who funded him, you know, the bankers who funded him, they're a bunch of elites. All the lefties, downtown progressives, they're all elites. And then he'd work within around a big U around the city. If you look at that, for the most part, this is exactly what we did when we got to the city. Judy Duncan, our great head organizer, started organizing in Weston. Well, Rob Ford rolls deep in Weston. Like, that guy has got a base. Scarborough, Etobicoke, North York, everywhere around, and being able to kind of polarize around, which really, if you look at what we did, basically, you know, we weren't doing anything much different.
So he's got a strong base in Scarborough as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's been the Acorn heartland.
Big time. So he is really able to tap into that. He'd go into, and then he starts what issues he's working on. Livable housing, you know, apartment standards. So he goes in and says, "Hey, I'm Rob Ford. What are you? We gotta fix up this building. What's going on around here? The landlord's not doing nothing. I'm gonna fix up the building. I'm the mayor of Toronto. I can do it." And he starts like allocating crazy amounts of resources, staff time to go in and whatever, fix up these buildings. And whether or not he does, or if he doesn't, he's able to say, "Well, I tried. I was fighting for you. Olivia, you know, my contestants were all downtown, took a lattes, you know, that kind of." And our members are like, "Yeah, he was there. He was there. He showed up at my house. He's crazy man enough that he knocks on, he'll go to a apartment building, spend a Saturday knocking on everybody's door, giving everybody a magnet." So our members, "Oh, God, you know, you're going to their house. They got magnets. Rob Ford from mayor." I'm like, you know, we're dealing with this. So
what's the new guy like? I mean, that's a hard act to follow.
So this is where it comes in that it ended up being really good for us. During the election campaign, we were trying to get the progressive candidate, Olivia Chow, who's the widow of Jack Layton, who's the ex-NDP leader who was really famous in Canada. Rebuilt the party. You know, the CBC voted on what, I don't know, him and Don Cherry, like the best Canadians ever or whatever. We were saying to her, "Listen, you got a problem here. You got your downtown latte drinkers. They're all voting for you, Olivia. They're all going to vote for you. But no one in the suburbs, the inner suburbs, is going to vote for you. They're all voting for Rob Ford." And she, I think a lot of downtown progressive types
are like, "We tried to get her to be our champion on the housing program, didn't we?"
Right. So we visit her. We say, "Hey, we want you to be the champion." She comes back and says, "I'm the only progressive." She tells our members, "Listen, guys, I'm the only progressive option. You don't vote for me, who you vote for? Rob Ford." And our members in the back of their head are going, "Yeah, Rob, he was at my apartment building. Now, you know, he was..."
Yeah. "Hey, that's a good idea." "Thanks, Olivia."
Right. So, anyway, she doesn't champion it. She has some crazy train thing about how it leads to more bureaucracy. It's no good. So she just... talking gibberish and nonsense. Anyway, she comes out with 2 weeks to go in the election, down 30 points, champions our campaign with a week to go. We're like, "What is the point of this? You know, yeah. You've lost the election already." We've been doing a campaign and building it up. I think then the new mayor, John Tory, he was the CEO of a telecom company. His last name's Tory, which in Canada, you know, they're conservative. He won because Olivia failed, and, you know, I think Rob Ford got cancer. Anyway, so to outflank Rob Ford, I think John Tory is picking up what we were pitching the whole time. That if he comes out, he cannot come out and not do anything for these people in these apartment buildings. He needs to be seen as doing something. Who's there? It's freaking us. And we're like, "Hey, we're like, we think we should, you know, you need to license landlords." So now they're coming up with something. They're not licensing landlords, but our dream of getting a per unit fee, a tax from landlords that they'd have to pay to fund an inspection regime, passed a vote to investigate, to develop that program, passed 42-0 at council.
Who would have ever thought?
No opposition to it. Their MLS, the head of MLS, had our members in talking about developing the program.
MLS stands for?
Municipal License and Standards.
Okay.
So that's the division in the city that's developing the program. So we're there. We're in the report. We're the key stakeholder. Our great organizer, Andrew Marciniak, who is leading up the project, was able to get an amendment in there that would say that because they're doing a cost recovery program, that existing money that they're doing to keep inspections up, $1.5 million, would go towards stakeholder engagement, tenant engagement, which there would be then opening up funds for us to help make the project successful, make our organization an institution in the city. Really exciting stuff, and all, I believe, coming out of the Rob Ford phenomenon, just a way for anybody in the city to say, "No, Rob Ford is a, you know, not a good guy. I was going to curse there because there's anyways.
No, I won't curse. No. Hey, let's keep it lively. So that's a fascinating analysis, but this is also built this whole Live Safe campaign that you're rolling out these days.
Right. So the dream is to have a license for landlords, that every unit would need to be inspected. They'd have to pay a fee, and that would go towards paying for everything. Or that there would be financial, severe financial penalties if they didn't do it. We've always argued that we should just not have to pay our full rent. Turns out they don't have the power to do that. Or they do not, they clearly do not have the power to do that. But we can get remedial action, we have gotten the city to go in and just do the repairs in the building, send them the bill on their taxes. So if you don't want to put in a boiler because it's cold in our really cold winters, yeah, they're going to go in and do it and send the bill. So this would systematize all of that, provide clear information in the lobbies about where the landlord is at in keeping the buildings up to code, and also be revenue neutral for the city. So it wouldn't be something that every year was dependent on a budget. We wouldn't have to go to the budget meeting and say, please, 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 sir, you know, give us money so our buildings, so I don't have to live with the cockroaches, or I don't have to deal with mold infestations in my building.
So that could be huge.
If we can win it, the budget, there's going to be a vote at the budget, it looks like, in February. If we're able to win this, I think this could be a major, major, major game changer for the organization.
Well, we'll have to come back next spring and
hopefully
see how
it's not just
look.
Me crying and me.
Yeah, see, you know, about cockroaches and living safe. Now, John, you're also a columnist for Social Policy Magazine, and I noticed the column you wrote in the issue that's going to press now in the next couple of days was about hydro. What's hydro, and what's the fight here?
We in Ontario, because we got so many lakes and everything, we call electricity hydro. So
okay.
I know that I went to the
United
States.
Sounds like water.
They're like electric company. I'm like, electric company, you mean a hydro company? But it does make more sense to call it the electric company. Anyways, hydroelectric power, the first major public transmission line of transmitting public power from was from Niagara Falls in the early 1900s, the Ontario government took, didn't say to the private companies that they weren't allowed. You can build your private electric company if you want to. You're just going to have to compete against our awesome, huge public power company. So, you know, of course, this is in the early 20th century public holding companies. I think back then we even had nationalized banks in Canada. Anyway, so this went on. We've had affordable hydroelectric power for a long time. In the early millennium, there was a movement to privatize the hydro company, then called Ontario Hydro. They changed it, called it Hydro One. So we were able to push that back. People, not Acorn, it was before Acorn times, but people were able to push that back, stop that from happening. They privatized a bit of it or made some more contracting out here, allowed some private companies to get more into the industry. But overall, the core transmission lines, the generation, was done by public companies, which is a huge revenue generator for the province. It just doesn't make any sense if you're trying to fund a public healthcare system, which the Ontario government needs to do to follow the Canadian Health Act. They need money. If you're generating hydro, selling it at a good cost, but still a profit that goes towards our public schools, our healthcare system, this is something I think Ontarians can live with. And polling that's been done by Union CUPE says overwhelming support to keep hydro public. Of course, there was a election last year, a provincial election, the Ontario Liberal government won the election, didn't mention anything about privatizing hydro, didn't mention anything, got a lot of support from labor unions, which was what it was. They got a lot of support because they're so progressive, they're doing so much good things. Fast forward 6 months, they're selling off the biggest public asset in the whole country, right? Which just generates billions of dollars for social programs are public, the public good. Yeah, so there's a big fight to go on that led by OPSU and QP, two large unions, public service unions. Of course, they like public service jobs. Their union depends on having public companies. So if there are no public companies, they lose out pretty bad. And our leaders in Toronto have really been helped lead up the campaign. Overall, there's been a tripling since the first talk about privatizing the hydroelectric company a decade ago. There's hydro rates have tripled for our members. So you go from, hey, I'm paying $20 a month to, you know, now I'm paying $90 a month, now I'm paying $80 a month.
So what's the chance of winning here?
The chance of winning is there. I think that you can push it back. There is a lot of pushback to be able to get Kathleen Wynne to change her mind. There's pressure going on around the IPO sale that if we're able to scare private investors from thinking that they are going to make money off of this, if we're able, then they won't want to bid on it as much. If we're able to think that we're going to win the political fight, the price of the IPO, which is going on pretty soon, we're hoping drives the price down. If we're not able to drive that price down, and the provincial government's going to make their billions of dollars to pay for stuff right now, then I think there's a good chance that we lose, is
wow.
My thought. So,
because privatization has not been as terrible in Canada as it has been in the United States, has it?
What do you mean?
It hasn't been, I mean, neoliberalism everywhere in the world. I mean, privatization is everywhere in the United States.
Oh, it hasn't happened as thoroughly as it has happened in...
I mean, you've had some privatization, I know.
Right.
Always a fight around state liquor, you know, provincial liquor stores.
But there, it's not... Yeah, it's like this, you know, it's a longer, more... Everyone in Canada, I think, it's just like... It makes sense to them. It's just it's something that's around... but I would argue that it has been. So we got a private highway in Ontario, the 407. They built a private highway. We're going to pay tolls on that highway. Some private company is going to make money off of that for 100
yeah,
more
like
years.
Mexico, yeah.
Right. What is that?
US,
like,
yeah.
What the heck is that? We don't have privatized prisons. Of course, we don't have private hospitals. But I think every step in that direction gets us closer to having private hospitals. And for Canadians... yeah, that's just not tolerable.
Good. Well, let's root for that because we'd like your electric power to be something you can keep your handles on. So, John, busy, busy, busy. It sounds like, you know, and the Blue Jays, they got a chance.
The Blue Jays got a great chance. I've been going to a lot of games, Wade.
Yeah.
And it's something else at the Dome. It's packed. Then they've had 20 straight sellouts now. This is all, of course, we went back-to-back. 92, 93, you know, the only other team to go back-to-back, I'm pretty sure, is the Yankees recently in the last 20 years. So the Blue Jays are just, they're something else. Best
St.
team.
St. Louis went back-to-back, no?
No, I'm pretty sure
no.
St. Louis didn't go back-to-back.
They had a run there, but I guess that was
pretty
every other year
run.
For a while.
They've been a decent run, but it's just so great.
Now they're computer hackers, you know, our neighbors down in Houston.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who knew they were going to be so good this year? And then all of a sudden you find out St. Louis Cardinals were hacking their, you know, personnel. Well, what is it?
They're like
sports.
This.
Sports. Talk about another criminal enterprise. We've got deflated balls. We've got hacking in baseball.
Well, I think the Cardinals.
Hockey's still okay, huh?
Well, there's no real cheating in hockey, you know. Hockey's a whole other thing. I always say, like, the sports culture and the hockey culture, I don't really like it so much. But. I'm the biggest Montreal Canadiens fan that's ever faced. So they say, hey, John, you're a big hockey fan. I'm like, I don't really know if I'm a hockey fan. I don't really like watching a Montreal game. Never missing a Montreal game. Anyways, and I was going to say the Cardinals are like the Pats. You know, they're like of baseball. They're like the Patriots of baseball.
Or what used to be the Yankees of baseball.
Right, right.
So when we get off of sports and get into back to Acorn, how do people find you, find out more about these campaigns, support Acorn Canada? Is there some email, website, something that they can reach out on?
Yeah, I'm at Toronto at acorncanada.org. Our website is acorncanada.org.
www.
www, I guess.
We're not, you know, we've got some non-internet access people.
Put it in the Google bar.
Voice of the people, 100,000 watts of people power. www.acorncanada.org is how you can find out about all these campaigns. Big John Anderson, head organizer of Toronto Acorn, says you can get a hold of him at toronto@acorncanada.org.
On Twitter, at Toronto Acorn.
Some people still use that Twitter, don't they?
Yeah,
it seems to be catching on. Yeah, I don't think Twitter's going to make it, but Facebook's something a lot of people are on.
Facebook.com/Toronto Acorn.
Thank you, John Anderson. Next week, we're going to be talking to people from Poland and hear what's going on in that part of the world. This has been Wade's World, 88.3 at KBF, 100,000 watts of people power. This podcast will be up Monday, and we'll see you next Friday. Thank you from Wade's World.